Are we on? Thank you. All right, we're back in session, and Mr. Wishart, would you take the stand, please? Okay, at this time, we'll continue with Ms. Valley. Do you have questions for Mr. Where were we when we broke? I believe we were back to you to redirect.
Alana.
Thank you, Judge Fetch. I believe that Mr. Norell may have completed his cross-examination.
Oh, thank you. All right, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, did you have further questions for Mr. Wishart?
Actually, I had several questions, but I discussed them with the company over the break, and I believe they're presenting everything. Either at this point or at some point shortly in the future, so I think I'm okay.
Okay, were there any documents that came up that we need to deal with?
Well, I handed out the order that Commissioner Calk requested, but okay. I don't know that we need to mark it. I'll just give the case number. It's in the Advanced Determination of Prudence for what we call Geronimo Wynn, but it's Prairie Rose. and it's case number PU-12-59. The order dated December 21, 2012.
Okay. And that is a commission's order, so that need not be introduced as an exhibit. Okay. All right. Anything else then, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No, thank you.
All right. We'll go back to the commission then. Commissioner Fedorchak, did you have any further question?
I do. Mr. Wishart, right?
Yes, ma'am.
I sort of like the wise heart. That was a cool name. walk me through on page 12 of your rebuttal testimony. On the top, there's a line, third line, says we need some level of certainty that once a resource decision is made, prudently incurred costs of that resource are recoverable. So, walk me through, I realize this is a big process, but kind of a condensed version of how you make your resource decisions.
How we make our resource decisions? Our resource planning process starts with a forecast of customer demand. And using various tools, we attempt to identify the least cost resource that can meet our customers' needs for reliability while complying with all the rules and regulations that we're subject to. We start off with a broad plan, identifying broad types of resources, peaking or intermediate or baseload or renewables, and then we proceed to a more focused acquisition process, such as we're in right now for the peakers that we proposed for North Dakota and Minnesota, where we identify specific plants and projects and evaluate that subset to identify the least cost of those to serve customers' needs.
Okay. But the demand comes first.
That's the primal. Resource planning is really driven by our forecasts of our customers' needs.
Okay. So is it a constant, are you constantly doing this? Or do you have a set process where you go through it once a year or once every few years and then you stop and then you start it up again?
Formal filings occur about every 2 to 3 years. Ideally it's 2. Sometimes it stretches to 3. But in reality we're doing it constantly. We're constantly evaluating our system, evaluating our latest forecast of customers' demand, evaluating new rules and regulations that are coming. So the formal filings happen on a periodic basis, but in the background, we're constantly evaluating our future needs.
Okay. Then when you have the resource additions, in past rate cases, how have these resource additions been handled?
in past rate cases.
Yeah. It sounds to me like the company is suggesting that this eliminating or not considering these PPAs is a change in precedent. And so I'm trying to understand how it used to be handled. There's a comparable. Maybe wind is totally different and hasn't been done before.
No. With new resources, if we have a new company-built power plant, within the rate case, it would be addressed through the discussions on depreciation because we would want to add that resource to rate base and have the depreciation expense included in our rate request for an increase. So that's the situation, how it would be handled for an new owned power plant. For purchase power, from my understanding, it has not previously been addressed because it flows through a different part of the customer's bill known as the fuel cost rider. And that has separate rules that allow for the additions of new PPAs to that rider. And it's subject to review at any time. But it just historically hasn't been done in the context of a rate case.
Mm-hmm. All right. So on these projects that we're looking at, these PPAs, what has been their effect on fuel costs? They're recovered through the rider, right?
Correct.
So we're not talking about adding these to base. They're just...
Correct.
Okay, so the rider is to recover fuel costs, and I guess the company's argument, I'm assuming, is that wind is the fuel?
Correct. It's an energy resource, whereas the issues you deal with in a rate case are capacity. The difference being capacity costs are the cost to construct a new power plant, whereas the energy costs are the cost of the fuel or the cost to other costs to produce the energy after the plant has already been built.
And is it your opinion that wind is just fuel? Isn't there some capacity in there?
There is a little capacity associated with wind based on MISO rules. We give wind a 13.3% capacity credit. However, the contracts that we're talking about are paid on a per megawatt hour basis, so we're only paying for every unit of energy that comes out of them. We're not paying any capacity payments for them.
Okay. Would there be capacity charges included in what you're being charged? Per megawatt hour. I mean, they're recovering.
You mean embedded within that number? From the developer's perspective? I suppose it's best for
me to
use...
They're recovering the cost of their investment.
They're recovering the cost of their initial investment, and their fuel costs are essentially zero because the wind's free.
Yeah. So the challenge here, in my opinion, is determining whether wind is a power... How much are we charging? How much do we take into consideration the plant versus the, you know, just as a... Considering it like a fuel?
Sure. As I mentioned, I think it's... completely appropriate to address the question of these contracts in whatever situation you deem appropriate. But whether or not to include consideration of your fuel cost rider in this docket, I would recommend it has more to do with the breadth of information you think you can address within this docket. If we feel that we have enough time to fully explore all the issues surrounding these PPAs that have been identified, we're more than willing to do that. But my perception is that to fully understand these contracts and the context under which they were signed to determine whether or not they were prudently acquired would take considerable amount of work. We'd have to go back, kind of reconstruct the business information that was available at the time, the rules and statutes that were in place in the time. It would be a lengthy discussion to fully vet these PPAs that have been identified.
Okay. All right. Then tell me how the transmission costs incurred to connect these projects. How are those recovered? Is that also in the fuel clause? Is it somehow tied to the cost per megawatt hour that you're being charged?
No, the transmission. Yeah, transmission goes into these base rates. The transmission system is a capital intensive thing. It's part of the base rates that are part of this docket.
So there's already transmission costs for these projects in this docket?
Correct. These projects didn't require much in the way of incremental transmission. Okay. Located fairly close to load or existing transmission lines. We didn't have to build anything new and big to support these.
All right. Let's see. I'd like to ask you some additional questions on wind, but I'm going to refrain because I think we can save that for a different proceeding, perhaps. Then I just want to pick your brain for a minute on demand-side management programs. Is that an area that you're involved in?
Yeah, resource planning is involved with demand-side management, and my first company at the job was in the demand-side management area.
Okay. In your opinion, have we exhausted the potential of demand-side management to the point where we've done what we can, and so resource additions are the only other alternative, or is there more room for work in that area?
No, we continue to work on demand-side management. One phrase we like to use commonly is that the low-hanging fruit has been picked. With federal energy efficiency standards forcing people to become more efficient, it reduces our opportunities to do supplemental efficiency on top of that. But we do have plans in place to continue our energy efficiency programs into the future, and we account for those savings when we do our resource planning process.
And is that something the company does? Is that something that happens through a rate case? When is the best time to tackle those kind of programs?
Historically, North Dakota has not participated very much in our energy efficiency programs. In our other jurisdictions, there's a separate proceeding called the Conservation Improvement Plan, where we lay out a 3-year plan and our budget, which type of resources we're going to target, and the estimated cost and benefits of those. That's a separate proceeding in our other jurisdictions.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. That's
not a problem.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Steve, for your testimony. What's your dissertation on? I see you're almost done.
It's not being written at the moment. I was focusing on
your topic?
Energy efficiency.
Of course, huh?
Yeah.
All right, good. So it's suffice to say you're a quote-unquote expert in this field.
I'd like to think so.
All right, fair enough. I want to make sure with Alana, too, now, there are 17 renewable PPAs that we're talking about here. And so, Lana, you've got the cut to the company, and you're going to get a listing of those 17. I want to make sure we have the witness here.
Commissioner, we do have this list.
Okay.
What I had asked for in addition was the dates that they came into the fuel adjustment, got recovery in a fuel adjustment. So that's coming, I believe. And then I will have a question about some trade secret information related to
it. And we'll be getting the megawatts of those back to the 50-megawatt threshold from the commission order saying you have to come in for ADPs?
Well, that I was going to be a question for the company also. I don't see any connection with the 50. The company says it's what they promised. I didn't look it
okay,
up.
Thank you. Steve, do you know of those 17 or those projects, do you know how many of them are above 50 megawatts? We know the Prairie Winds one is 200 megawatts.
The 17, the list of 17 does not include the Prairie Rose.
Okay, fair enough.
But of the 17, none are over 50. Oh, Fiberman is the one that is listed at 55 megawatts.
Okay, so we'll sort through that in a work session. But I just want to kind of go through, I'm not sure how this discussion will lay out, but it sets the stage, I think, that prior to me getting on the commission, we had a commission order that basically directed Xcel Energy to come in front of the commission before they enter into these kind of things and ask for an ADP. And so the Prairie Wind, of course, came in front of the commission when I was here and others that are at the bench right now. And basically we looked at this case number PU1259, and said it was not timely. So that kind of set the stage that we wanted to – I was here at the time. Said I didn't like the fact that the company came in after the fact and asked for this ADP. It wasn't timely, so we rejected it with timely. But put this sentence in there that further proceedings to establish a record regarding the appropriate rate-making treatment for the cost – a purchase power agreement with Geronimo Wind, LLC. So that's something that we ordered. So how do we reconcile this? Is the company going to put something in saying, well, we request to pull all this out of this rate case? Or is that something that during the work sessions you'd like us to direct? It could be very simple if the company would just say, you know what, let's pull all these wind farms out right now and we'll deal with it later. Because otherwise we're going to put it back in. I mean, do you have any thoughts on that, how we should reconcile these? Because if you leave it to me, I'll just disallow everything and we'll be done.
Well, let's not do that.
Okay. that would be very easy for me to reconcile inside this rate case.
What do we propose for a review process of the 17 PPAs? First, I'd like to point out that these came in, they started producing energy in the 2010 timeframe. The PPAs were agreed to, preceding that. So we are reaching back quite a distance. And I believe it predates
it does. The
ADP statute that you're talking about.
We think it does, but we'll get to
the bottom of that. Yes, sir. I would recommend a separate proceeding. Perhaps a new docket open to review the FCR. How it's calculated and what the rules are associated with adding new resources to that. Because at the time we were complying with the FCR rule that says when you have a renewable energy contract, you're allowed to add that to the FCR. I think such a docket would, within such a docket, we could go back and review the decision-making process that was performed at the time to judge to see if it was prudent. I'd like to point out that many of these wind contracts that are identified in the list of 17 were selected through a 2008 RFP process. If you recall, in 2008, that's when we were hitting our all-time spikes in natural gas prices.
But the long and short of it, you're recommending we pull this out. I'll just do it a separate proceeding.
That is my recommendation. I'm sorry.
And does the company, you speak for the company on that, I would presume you're...
I believe there's a consensus with
okay.
the company on that.
I think that kind of cleans up the rest of my questions then. I did have just one, since you're an expert in the field. All right?
Sure.
No, and good job for finishing up that. How would you advise commissioners like myself when you've got a state like North Dakota that's energy rich, we have presumably enough energy to meet all that Fargo and Grand Forks and Minot would ever need, but an integrated system keeps building more generation to meet its integrated system needs, but yet North Dakota ratepayers are going to be paying for that long term. We maybe don't need more to meet North Dakota demand. How do you reconcile that?
I think North Dakota, if North Dakota does have excess generation sufficient to meet its entire demand, that would imply that there are currently unused generators in the region. Our most recent resource acquisition process allowed for additional existing generation, to participate in that process. To the extent that there's other utilities with owned generations within North Dakota, they were more than welcome to participate in our process and say, hey, we got an extra 100 megawatts at this generator that we're not using. We'd like to submit that for consideration in your process to see if it's a least cost solution to serve the needs of the customers. We have an open process that actively looks for existing generation, and we did have a short-term capacity offer from Great River Energy So they participated in that way. So when we look at our system, we do see a capacity need in the 2017, starting in the 2017 timeframe. It has to do with the retirement of our Black Dogs 3 and 4 coal units. We did that to comply with the federal emission rules. And then there's load growth in the area too. So even if we're okay now, load's going to continue to grow. And by 2017, we think there'll be more customer demand than we have resources to meet it.
So do you actively work with Montana-Dakota Utilities as they develop their generation needs to how that might tie into your generation needs?
There isn't a lot of cooperation between utilities when it comes to planning new resources, no. But we'd be open to the discussion.
So they all bid into MISO, if you will. So, but you're saying at the utility level, you don't talk to MDU. I mean, we have a history of MDU and Otter Tail building coal plants together. So why wouldn't XL Energy be working with MDU, who's building generation, a lot of generation right now in the state?
I don't have a good explanation for that. Traditionally, XL has been large enough to build and finance our own power plants. On a integrated system-wide basis, our load can grow by 200 megawatts per year, and that's sufficient load growth that we can build our own power plant to serve our own needs.
But you're buying all these PPAs.
When we look at a new resource, we're indifferent to whether it's an owned or a PPA resource. We want the best deal, whatever's best for our customer, and that's why we have these competitive processes where we put all projects on the table and compare them.
Have you ever seen commissions direct utilities to work together on generations?
No, I have not.
Is that something that would be out of the realm, perhaps?
I don't think so, no.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Christman?
Mr. Wishart, just for clarification, I look at this list on Exhibit B. I don't think it's really important, but just to be clear, it says 17 PPAs. I count them. I only got 16.
Uh-oh.
But I'm going to refer to 17 here, and if there's one on here that doesn't show up on here that's in a different category, then I was probably going to throw my questioning off. But what I see these all have in common is they're renewable. Can you give me, I know we're looking for dates on these. Would the earliest ones be, I don't know, 8, 10, 12 years old?
The earliest one came online in 2003.
And how new might the newest?
Newest one was January 1 of this year.
Okay, so 03 through 13.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Then I want to jump back to your testimony of today. On the second page, the very top paragraph that's carried forward from the first page.
I'm sorry, am I direct testimony or rebuttal? My opening statement. I'm sorry.
Your opening statement.
Yes, sir.
You mentioned criticism of these contracts, and I'm assuming you're talking about criticism from advocacy staff?
They're consultants, yes, sir.
They're consultants, yeah. Okay. So the advocacy staff criticism of these contracts is based on 2020 hindsight and this is an important part, does not consider all the factors that were in place at the time the decisions were made. Later on, you say that you make your business decisions based on the best information available at the time, and many of the identified contracts were acquired at a time when natural gas was at an all-time high, and your assessment was that the contracts would be a cost-effective way to protect your customers from a volatile natural gas market. That's the end of the paragraph. The next paragraph goes into working more in the future, nothing about the decision-making process for entering into these PPAs. So when I read this testimony, and you really source the reasoning the rationale behind these PPAs as being the volatile natural gas market, and you don't even acknowledge that in that time frame, policymakers in the largest jurisdiction were increasing the renewable energy mandates that you face, and all of your PPAs are renewables. You've bought no coal power, no natural gas power. Would it be unfair for me to conclude that it's really you that is not acknowledging all the factors?
Renewable energy policy did play a role in acquiring these resources. That's definitely true. And it gets to why I believe this should be handled through a separate proceeding. To understand each one of these renewable energy contracts requires a review of the rules that we were facing at the time. It's not the biomass contracts were not associated with what we call our regular renewable energy standard. It was from the, as I mentioned before, the relicensing of our Prairie Island nuclear facility and the storage of spent fuel on site was the source of those biomass contracts. The solar contracts are different from the wind contracts. The solar contracts were funded through our Renewable Energy Development Fund. That's funded solely by Minnesota ratepayers. Another thing that's not considered in staff's consultants' criticism of these contracts, they set an arbitrary $60 cutoff level when they identified which contracts were bad and which contracts are good. To set a single price level for three very different types of resources is not consistent with best policy. Different type of contracts provide different kinds of benefits to customers, and to use a single price level for each one is inappropriate. So that's why I say that we should try to deal with this in a separate docket so we can address all the factors that were in play.
Well, just a comment. I think that whether it's a separate docket or in this rate case proceeding, the mandates that one jurisdiction comes up with and then end up being paid for by ratepayers in another jurisdiction are like an elephant in the room, and whether it's this case or a separate docket, to not even acknowledge those mandates, I don't think does justice.
And we've heard the commission loud and clear on this matter, and with the most recent Minnesota solar mandate, we worked very hard as that was being developed to ensure that the cost for that would be isolated to the Minnesota customers. In 2008, when some of this wind contract came on, I don't know if we had heard the commission's message as loud and as clear as we do now.
Thank you. No further questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. All right, now we'll go back to the company. Ms. Valley, do you have any redirect?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few additional questions. Mr. Wishart, you were previously asked about whether the biomass purchases in Minnesota were pursuant to statute or commission order, what the authority for those was. Do you agree that those were, in fact, ordered by the Minnesota legislature as part of the dry cast storage at Prairie Island?
Yes, I do understand that to be this case.
And another question, in terms of the timing of these resources, have those resources been used to provide service to all of our jurisdictions since they've come online?
As that's how the integrated system works, yes, all the resources, all the generation resources in our portfolio serve all of our customers.
And are those currently included in your overall resource planning process?
Yes, and our resource planning process assumes that they will continue to operate until the end of their contract term.
Thank you, Mr. Wishart.
Thank you, Ms. Valley. Mr. Norrell, any recross?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
Yes. I wanted the record to indicate that one of the other items that we had asked the company for over the break was a simple to understand list in sort of chronological order of the Minnesota requirements imposed mostly by the legislature, I believe, and the company's, fulfillment of that, because that's one of the things we were trying to look up yesterday and then weren't able to print. So that is one of the items that I believe will be coming in, and we're not sure how quickly. There were some questions that came up, though, through this round of cross-examination. And the first one, the company, we had some questions we talked to the company about over the break, and they did explain that probably the answers were in the trade secret version of the pages that were attached to Exhibit B. And they are, but I think that we should then ask for the trade secret version to also be an exhibit that would continue to remain trade secret, but it would be in the record. If you look at the attachments, there's some blank columns. Well, those blank columns are filled in the trade secret version that staff and the commission may need to use, and so it should be in the record. I don't know that we have to physically go get it out of the vault right now, because it can be easily identified as the trade secret version of this exact data response. But it would be, I would ask that it be admitted under trade secret protection.
And that's an attachment to Exhibit 8?
No, Exhibit B. It was the public version is attached to B that we just got here this morning. And it's just the trade secret version of the same exact thing.
All right. Is there any objection, Ms. Valley?
No, Your Honor. We'll provide that.
Okay. Well, and I think we have it. But if you want to provide an additional one, that's fine. We'll keep it sealed. Now, related to that.
Just a moment. How about if we label that Exhibit B1?
Okay.
Okay, so that will come in as Exhibit B1. All right.
And it'll be the trade secret version. Okay.
Right.
Related to that, though, there are a couple other questions that I guess I'm expecting the company to answer, but perhaps request that they be covered by trade secret protection. One is whether there, and so I'm going to ask this, but you don't have to answer it publicly. If you want to produce a document that's trade secret, I think that's acceptable. One is whether there are caps on the amount of power under those contracts, caps on what you have to purchase, or do you have to take it all? You know, it's a little more of the detail of the purchase contract that I understand was not in the trade secret thing we went and looked at. Okay? And the second one is whether you're making capacity or demand payments under those contracts, and whether that's in base rates, which should be a public answer, I believe. And then the third one is, what would the effect be, and this may be a public thing that you can answer, I don't know, it's up to you to tell me, but what would the effect be on the fuel adjustment if instead of recovering the cost under the contract, you were limited to recovering MISO LMP prices?
Okay.
And so I don't know if you need time to answer those, and I don't know if you want to file them under trade secret. I recognize it if you choose to do that.
I think I can address a lot of this.
Okay.
First question was, do the contracts contain caps on the total amount of energy that can be produced? With respect to the wind and solar contracts, I can specifically say no. With respect to the biomass contracts, I do not know at this time. I would have to research that. When it comes to the question of whether there are demand payments associated with any of these contracts, the answer is no. These are all dollars per megawatt hour contracts.
Okay. Oops, sorry.
And when it comes to what would be the impact on the on the FCR if instead of paying the contracts, we paid MISO LMPs. That is a proposal that I suggested for recovery of the Prairie Rose contract. And I think that would be an appropriate strategy for that contract. In the near term, I think the fuel cost rider would go down, but our analysis based on forecast of market prices from three independent consulting firms is that after a matter of a few years, that situation would reverse and the FCR would actually be higher for the Prairie Rose contract. For the other contracts, I'd have to do an analysis, but I'd like to note that specifically for the biomass and the solar contracts, I believe strictly replacing it with MISO LMPs would be inappropriate because although there's no capacity payments associated with those contracts, there's a capacity benefit associated with those contracts that are not captured by the MISO LMPs. MISO LMPs are energy only. Those biomass contracts contribute over 100 megawatts of firm capacity that is not captured by the MISO LMPs, and that would I believe that would be an inappropriate strategy. Same with the solar resources. They will provide a capacity too. And the wind contracts have that small 13.3% capacity benefit that would also need to be accounted for that is not covered by the MISO LMP. The reason why I suggested it for Prairie Rose is Prairie Rose is a special situation. It's called the net zero situation where it shares an interconnection and therefore does not get that 3.3% capacity accreditation. That's why I thought MISO LMP would be appropriate for Prairie Rose. And another good reason to maybe try to address that in a different docket to try to identify what those capacity payments should be.
Okay, and you just prompted a question. Maybe for the record, define net zero because I was asked that question. I couldn't do it by a commissioner.
I'll do my best. Net zero is a concept where two generation resources share one point of interconnection. It tends to work well with peakers and wind because the peaker only needs that interconnection maybe 5% of the year. The remaining time, that interconnection point would be open for energy to flow through from the wind resource. But because two are sharing one, there's no capacity accreditation in that situation for the wind resource.
And why is it just there's no capacity for one of them and not the other? Or
there's 200 megawatts of capacity outlet at that one location. And typically the first resource that was there is that 200 megawatts of accredited capacity. The second one that comes in and shares it
is the net zero.
Is the net zero.
Okay.
I think it's an interesting concept that helps reduce costs by not having to build a new substation or interconnection point for a new resource if they can share because it's only being utilized 5% of the time.
Okay. Now, one final question, and I should know this if it's in there, but I don't. Point us to the portion of the application that covers, or testimony, that covers the issue of the recovery of Prairie Rose.
My supplemental direct testimony does have a discussion about if Prairie Rose was not included in the fuel clause, what I thought would be an appropriate replacement mechanism.
And I'm sorry for not remembering that off the top of my head, but it's getting too...
It was a long time ago.
It was, yes, it's starting to be glaze over time. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle. Commissioner Fedorchik, do you have follow-up questions?
I might, but I'd like to take a couple minutes and talk with... our staff advisors really quickly before we continue.
All right. We'll take a couple minutes.
Sorry about that, sir. I'll do my best. So are you a wildcat?
Arizona Wildcat, that's right.
Yeah.